Brian Kimberling is in the studio tonight. Though he now lives in England, he grew up in southern Indiana, and that is the setting for his first novel titled Snapper, for which he was awarded the inaugural Janklow and Nesbitt Bath Spa Prize. Brian, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
If you would, start us off by reading from Snapped. And this gets us acquainted with this state that's just next door to us, one of our neighbors.
The dictionary definition of Hoosier is a native or resident of Indiana. The commonest usage in all four states bordering Indiana, and even as far west as St. Louis, is as a synonym for idiot, redneck, lowlife, loser, bumpkin. Reviled on all sides, Hoosiers do not make much of their distinctive name, nor generally think much of their native state. Indiana is rural, agricultural, and surrounded by bully states with great confidence in their own sophistication. The origin of the word is unknown. Silly stories abound about the sound of someone calling "Who's there?" through the door of a log cabin in pioneer days, and of bar brawls followed by inquiries into whose ear lay on the floor. One of the more reasonable theories is that the name stems from a shipping magnate in the 19th century. John Hoosier's men referred to a number of notorious roughnecks who plied the Ohio River on flat log rafts near Evansville, and who may have given the state denizens their nickname and a precursor of their reputation. And yet, if Indiana is the bastard son of the Midwest, then Evansville is Indiana's snot-nosed stepchild. A bend in the river, causing it to stretch a mile wide at some points, gives the area other peculiarities, which may have some bearing on its residents' eccentricities. To the west of the city of Evansville lies the northernmost cypress grove of its kind in the country, a miniature swamp where bald eagles nest and paddlefish flash in the sun. To the east of the city, as you approach the stripper pits, lies the northernmost pecan grove of its kind, somewhat less picturesque. Ecologically speaking, it is as though two slender southern fingers were reaching up to pinch Evansville and spirit it back to Dixie, or at least, back to northern Kentucky. It was near Evansville that the Confederates made their only raid north of the Ohio. The local speech has inflections that are closer to the mellifluous twang of Kentucky than the harsh, bland nasalities of Indiana proper. Kentucky, of course, would rather move en masse to Mexico than claim any kinship with Evansville, but its likeness is undeniable. I talked to Shane's dad about this once. He makes great company over a pitcher of beer and a pool table. "Neither north nor south, nor fish nor fowl," he said. "I guess that makes it red meat," I said. "It's peculiar," he said, "but it's not all bad. You know the Whirlpool factory?" That was a rhetorical question. It was one of the city's largest employers. It's closed now. The operations were moved overseas. "They made airplanes during World War II. A city that can make an airplane out of refrigerator parts can't be all bad."
So this is the setting in which Nathan Lockmuller, the main character, lives. He is an astute observer of wildlife and human life. So tell us about Nathan, who he is, what he does, and who Lola is in his life.
Nathan is a bird researcher. The songbirds in Indiana are in mysterious decline, and he's employed by the university and various government agencies to find nests and count what's in them. Lola is a rather elusive young woman with whom he is madly in love. She's not always in the same place at the same time, geographically or otherwise.
She often has seemingly multiple relationships going in her life.
I think they're both very free-spirited, but she may be more free-spirited than Nathan.
Talk a little bit about what his actual job entails, because he finds himself in some pretty interesting circumstances.
He sometimes does dangerous things and encounters dangerous people and animals. He spends a lot of time in the woods, and one of the things I wanted to get across there was that Indiana traditionally produces good woodsmen, doesn't produce much else. So he does encounter a fair amount of hazard.
So when you think about a good woodsman, what qualities do you think about going into that person?
Interestingly, I drew a lot on my brother for Nathan. My brother is an outstanding woodsman, and he will go out and harvest the right kind of weed to make rope and so on. And it's some kind of familiarity with the surroundings that is crucial, and being observant, obviously spending a lot of time in the woods. Other places make mariners and mountaineers. Indiana makes woodsmen. Most of them hunt or fish or something, whereas Nathan is more pacifist.
I am impressed with his skills of observation, especially when he meets a challenge. There are some circumstances where you might expect a person to run away. What does he do in those instances?
There's some tension there because he says at one point that he was young and he didn't know any better. The book is narrated from some point past all this misadventure in the woods. But at the time, he was very conscientious about doing his job and about keeping these records of what's happening to the birds straight. So if there was a problem, he tried to deal with it. Years later, said, well, that was kind of stupid.
I think that it's also interesting to come upon the quirky characters that he meets, sometimes friends, sometimes seemingly foe. But I want to move on to your life because I'm very interested to know how you got from southern Indiana to England. So tell us what that progression was, if you would.
I graduated from IU and I went to teach English in the Czech Republic. I thought I'd be gone for a year or something, but that led to an opportunity to teach English in Turkey. And soon I was in Mexico. And then I drifted into designing websites and databases and dabbling in journalism. And I got married, which got me to England. I had a very checkered career. Career isn't really the word. I'm so pleased that on the British edition of Snapper, there's a quote from Nathan saying, my CV looks like a train wreck. And I want to show this to my mom and say, see, it came out okay in the end.
Were you writing this novel all along? Is it something that you spent an intense period of time on? How did it come about?
It probably took me between 15 and 18 months. Pretty quick. I've been writing other things all along. I had some plays produced in England. But yeah, 15 or 18 months is a little misleading because most of it just came out very quickly and then I hit a wall and couldn't do anything for 3 months and then I finished it. I'm hoping the second book is like that too.
So are us all. This is a wonderful novel. I'm wondering what this process is like for you with this first published novel. Discoveries along the way, certain things you have or are learning, or surprises that have come up?
It feels like I've been magically transported to a completely different world. And it's wonderful, and I'm really enjoying it. All my Christmas presents last year were bird-themed. That was interesting. When I wrote it, I hoped that some small university press would run off 500 copies. I had no idea that I'd be taking it on tour. It's exhilarating and couldn't be happier.
So are those of us who have read it. I want to thank you for visiting with us tonight. It's so interesting to learn a couple generations later that southern Indiana and all its quirkiness has not changed. It's a unique place. Thanks for visiting with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Kimberling's debut novel, Snapper, received a starred review on Booklist, which noted that he writes gracefully about absurdity, showing a rich feeling for the whole range of human tragicomedy. You'll find more information at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.